All right, you're back in the DFSR, and we're here with our NFL podcast for Thursday, October 6th. I am Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
Hey, buddy. We are going to talk some week five value plays for NFL. If you're getting going with DraftKings and FanDuel, we'll be recapping our main picks article and some other value plays that we like to put together lineups for those two sites. We're from dailyfantasysportsrankings.com or dfsr.com for short, and we're here to help you get started or continue winning with FanDuel and DraftKings. You can head over to the site and grab a free trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab, which helps you calculate optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings, NFL, MLB, very, very soon NBA. And we also have our base projections up for NHL right now. So it's really kind of all happening in the sports world. I think at one point yesterday, every single sport offered by DraftKings was available in the contest lobby. You don't necessarily see that too often. Ooh, yeah, very exciting. All right, week five value plays for NFL. Let's start with the quarterback position. I sound like this is my first time ever talking about something.
Let's talk about the quarterback position in the National Football American League.
I like how you always just...
Thomas Brady.
I like how you always default to just like a somewhat stereotypical accent for things like that.
Well, first of all, it's generic. So this accent is not from anywhere particularly. And that's why it's not offensive, Doug. I'm a lot more PC than you, so I don't want to hear your PC policing me.
Quarterback this week is, I think it was probably the hardest position we had to write up, I would say. A lot of the other positions seemed to crystallize pretty quickly. Quarterback did not. I'm not sure. I mean, I think it means something. We can get into what I think that means, but where do we think we want to start with quarterback this week? And you know, who are the guys that that's kind of stood out to us?
Well, I think the big question on everyone's mind for this week is going to be whether it's time to play Tom Brady or not. And I wrote this up in the article, but it's one of those situations that the whole industry and you know, ESPN and anywhere you're going to want to look is all over the narrative of Brady's back. The Patriots are pissed. They got shut out by Buffalo. And, you know, they're relatively healthy now. Well, Gronk is still kind of questionable, but looks like everyone's going to play. And he's just going to go off for 5 touchdowns, et cetera, et cetera. And we kind of think so, too. we're not totally sure. I mean, Brady is definitely worth these prices in the past. It's obviously quite a good matchup with Cleveland in that they'll win. But, yeah, it's a very tough one to evaluate. But that's definitely, I think, going to be where most people's minds, you know, where their eyes drawn first when evaluating quarterbacks this week. And I think that's reasonable.
Yeah, he faces a Cleveland team who's obviously bad. I mean, they're huge favorites this week. It's going to be hard to sort of get away from his safety and cash games. The only thing, I guess, I mean, the question marks would be he hasn't played in a while, so that matters. I don't think he's even been with the team. There could be some rust there. I mean, that's like a sort of just a stupid word to use that I'm not using. It's not totally analytical, but that would be my concern is they just kind of play it safe with him to start. I don't suspect they're going to need to do a lot to win here. And unless for his prices on DraftKings and FanDuel, you need to make sure, basically New England has to keep their foot on the gas the entire time for him to really, really pay off. That's my only concern. He just is expensive. But really every other piece you would want in terms of good matchup, he's Brady, they're going to probably throw, he has weapons. I guess you mentioned Gronk being hurt. That's probably a real thing. He still has Edelman. I think he probably...
And Martellus Bennett. I mean, Bennett's a guy he can absolutely use as well. Another thing that might be different about this year is that in the past, Brady's derived a lot of his value in games that weren't close from using the short passing game as a sort of de facto running game. And given that Blunt's been pretty successful in just the traditional ground and pound style this year, I could see that not being the case for the Pats this year. So it's kind of unclear. I'm not totally sure. I probably, you know, in the interest of full disclosure, I probably won't personally play Brady, but I don't blame anyone who does either.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll probably end up going a little cheaper at quarterback, which we'll get to in a second. Yeah. But I think Brady is the place you should start in the conversation just because he's the name, the price, the matchup, really all the other contextual pieces fall into place for him. After him, who do we see as the safer play, or you know, in terms of cash games, who do you think we should be running out there if we're not paying up for Brady?
Well, I'm going a few tiers lower. I know you wrote up Aaron Rodgers, maybe you can give a case for him in a minute, but I went down to the combination of Phil Rivers and Brian Hoyer. So okay. This is, you know, not names you might hear and instantly associate with safety necessarily, but I'll go into these cases really quick. So Brian Hoyer's a guy, actually, I think I might be looking at the most. one thing I wrote up in the picks article was that we saw just 5 300-yard passers in week four. I mean, that's really low, and I think well below expectation, like about as low a week as we probably would have projected for the whole season. And given that we got one in week four, it stands to reason that, you know, it could have just been a total outlier. My suspicion is that that winds up being more of a theme as we go forward. And so when positions get shallow that way, there's essentially two ways you can go. You can go for high-end safety, like we've done with wide receiver in the past, or you can go for value, guys that are producing at a similar level to their better-known counterparts, but who are a lot cheaper. And for me, Hoyer really fits in that category. So now he's turned in back-to-back 300-plus yard performances, again, better in the context of only five in the last week. And he had two touchdowns in both of those as well. And, you know, also just throwing, I think he had a 70% completion rate as a starter this year. Now that's quite a bit above his historical rate, but it also, you know, accounts for how the Bears are sort of using him and deploying him. So after watching Cutler melt down earlier this season, I really think that Fox and the Bears are going to continue to trust Hoyer going forward. And at 6,000 on FanDuel, I mean, that's like what you get on a guy who wasn't even a starter going into the week, much less a guy who's had, like, we played Dak Prescott, you know, sight unseen at 5,000.
Right.
So an extra 1,000 for a guy who we've seen throw back-to-back 300-yard weeks and two touchdowns in a good matchup in Indianapolis. I'm very, very intrigued by Hoyer.
Yeah, Indianapolis ranks near the bottom of the league. They're 29th in DVOA against the pass. They stink. You know, they can't really stop anyone, and they play at a pace where they throw enough with Luck that there's just going to be opportunities for Hoyer there. I think he really is just seems very, very, very safe for this price. I'm all over it, especially on FanDuel. He allows you to basically do anything else you want to do with the lineup, especially at the wide receiver, where I think we're going to want to pay up a decent amount this week. So Hoyer for me, you're going to make the case for Rivers, and I will make a case for Rodgers somewhat, but Hoyer for me does stand out. Well, that's funny about Rodgers. I'll wait for this in a second. But Hoyer does stand out to me as just kind of a safe guy. And these quarterbacks, if you have a sort of a higher floor with a quarterback, then you don't need to pay a lot for him, then I just say why not, and the matchup really dictates it as well.
Yeah, and I think, you know, this is kind of a game theory or a strategic question, which is, you know, where do you spend up in the different formats? You know, we've written in our free ebooks, which you can get at dfsr.com/ebook. You can also read about this in many articles, but generally speaking, quarterbacks have the lowest coefficient of variation. And so as a general rule, it's often correct to pay up for quarterbacks in cash games, like we did with Newton last week or whatever. But when all the quarterbacks are, you know, not having a lot of variance, but all haven't been that amazing,
right?
And, you know, then it starts to throw things a little out of whack. So, I'm quite high on Hoyer for this week for that reason alone. Like, I don't know if he's a transcendent talent, but I do like what he has there. So, so the case for Rivers. So Rivers, another guy, I mean, back-to-back 300-yard performances, something that only a couple of guys in the NFL can boast. Now he wasn't terrific in that game against Indianapolis from a fantasy perspective, and that, like, he wound up only with 12 fantasy points and 326.
Well, just no no touchdowns. The yards,
no touchdowns,
there,
right? Will kill you, right? And, you know, I think people also rightfully looked at that and said, well, you know, he also has fewer weapons, right? And particularly fewer red zone options. And while that's true, I think that, you know, definitely a bounce back performance from a fantasy perspective, again, essentially an identical performance against New Orleans that he's had against Indianapolis. But yeah, we're seeing that with his current assortment of tools, he's going to be in that 66% completion percentage range. You know, Melvin Gordon's been so abysmal on a yards per carry basis that the Chargers have been forced to pass the ball a little bit more. And I think that trend will continue this week. And the good news for him is, yeah, you can point to a weak strength of schedule in the last few weeks with New Orleans and Indianapolis, but it doesn't get any more difficult against Oakland this week. So Oakland, the second most generous team to opposing passers this season, where New Orleans was the first. So I think this will be another great week for Rivers. I think probably you can't pay too much more for him than this, you know, almost independent of the matchup. So this might be the last time I'll recommend Rivers all season, because right, I suspect he'll be good. The price will go up and then I'll be off him. But yeah, I think he's a great value this week.
Yeah, that's really the only thing is price, is where you're paying the same. Basically, I'm FanDuel, you know, Brady at 87, Rivers at 83. That's, you know, really pretty close in the same range, obviously. So that is the only thing that kind of worries me about him. Everything else about him seems great. Matchup, you know, the amount of volume that he throws for, the fact that they just they don't really play good enough defense that they can just run the ball game out, even though they tried to last week.
And they don't run the ball well enough. Like, right. If they're going to end the game, you know, they have a number of reasonable short passing options. He's developing a rapport with Hunter Henry there, you know, and his other options, Travis Benjamin, Tyrell Williams. Like, none of these guys are really guys that are going to stretch the field necessarily. So I can see them continuing to, yeah, just dump the ball in close and, you know, play a sort of a ball control style, but one that's led through the air and not on the ground.
Yeah, and they're underdogs going in, so they're -3.5, or excuse me, they're +3.5 to Oakland right now. That has, the highest overall total on the whole week. I'm not, just as a glance, it looks like it does. So, yeah, everything there lines up for him. I think those are pretty much the directions we go. I wrote up Rodgers. It was funny. Our system likes him, and I get why, because the Giants, they're much, much worse against the pass this year than they are against the run. So if they can shut down the running game enough that a guy like Rodgers probably will just want to pass because that's just a much, much better option when you face the Giants. It's probably drawing a little too much on his historical numbers than it is on just what he's been recently. And by recently, I just mean even in the last kind of 2 years, because the accuracy for him has really dropped.
Really the question. Yeah. Like, yeah. Is that accuracy thing real or not? I'm not sure. It's definitely a troubling trend for a quarterback who's getting a little bit older. Now, we don't usually see accuracy drop-offs, you know. I mean, he's only 32, so he's not ancient or anything. But yeah, it's not a good sign, right? Like, you'd just as soon it go the other way if you got to choose. So.
Right, and the problem with him is that you get, well, this is a sort of chicken and the egg thing when you look at early season numbers, especially for defenses. So he was pretty bad against the Lions. I know this is not the case for a guy, right? He's pretty bad against Lions. He didn't really throw that much, but the Lions ranked dead last in DVOA, and that's even with the Rodgers performance. Now, he threw 4 touchdowns, and so that really boosted his overall performance, and it meant that they didn't have to run as much. Excuse me, they didn't have to pass as much late game because it was just kind of over by the time they were really going to get anything started. So his thing kind of falls in the middle for me. I think that they will just throw the ball more against the Giants. The Giants, from an offensive standpoint, you want to think they can sort of keep pace with the Packers, though that's not totally clear. I don't mind him. He's more of a tournament play for me, and I really wrote him up because the system likes him. And again, I get why it does, and I just don't think he would fall into the cash game category for me at all this week. But I do think there's upside for him in this matchup.
Well, I think if you're calling for upside from Rodgers, basically what you're suggesting is that they're going to kind of flip the script on how things have played out so far this season. And I think that's reasonable. You know, he definitely has a track record of putting up big numbers, you know, and passing yards in bunches, no question about it. It's just that it hasn't happened this season at all. Like, 3 right. back-to-back games with 200, essentially a flat 200 yards passing. He's up to 617 passing yards on the season. Very troubling to me. Also, I think it's worth noting, like, his fantasy totals have been decent, but he's averaged a full 6 fantasy points a game on the ground. And while, yeah, he's generated value on the ground in the past, it's been more in the order of, like, mid 2 points per game versus, like, you know, rushing touchdowns in his first 2 games. This season, he only had 1 rushing touchdown all of last year. So I think that for me, Rodgers, he looks more like a guy who you can get more cheaply in the future when these performances continue or he stops running hot on the ground. But I understand why you call him a high upside play. It's just not where I'm going to try to find upside this week, probably.
They have the second highest implied total of the week. And again, that's because the Giants' defense just leaves a lot to be desired, especially through the pass. So anyway, he's definitely, I want to make it clear, he's farther down the chain than the other 3 guys we mentioned, but we did write him up this week, and I think it's fine. And we'll go, you know, we'll touch on some more quarterbacks when we do our game-by-game breakdown later in the week on what's just tomorrow on Friday. Running back is another interesting one. We can go through the guys we wrote up. We started with Le'Veon Bell. He's probably clearly the highest just raw points guy we're looking at this week. Can we pay $8,600 for him against the Jets, who are a slow team overall?
I think we can. And I guess I should probably justify those comments because it really is, you know, with running backs, so much of it comes down to opportunity and you know, the opposing team that you're playing against, you know, obviously impacts opportunity in a way that's really different, I think, even than a lot of other positions. So I'll explain that for a second. So basically, when you're playing against the other team, there are a number of factors that can come into play when it comes to reducing or increasing a guy's opportunity. The first general one is game script, right? Like, is this game going to be close? Is it going to be a blowout? And which side of the equation is your team on? So in this case, I don't think we have a lot of matchup concerns necessarily. So that's kind of off the table. But the other thing with the Jets is just their pace of play. You know, the Jets definitely are not a team that's looking to stretch the field. Like, they're kind of the anti-Colts in that regard, right? Even when they do pass, it's going to be a lot of dump offs to Matt Forte and stuff in tight to, you know, Deckard. Well, Deckard's out this week, right? But even Marshall is not a guy who's really going deep at this point in his career, and Nunwa is kind of playing the same way. So I think that this will be a slower game. And all that said, I mean, Le'Veon Bell is just used in every facet of the game. He's a terrific yards per carry guy. They're going to give him the ball a ton. He is also used a lot in the passing game. They talked about wanting to use him in the slot. They experimented with that a little bit against KC, and I think we'll continue to see more of that as well, especially if Revis is giving Brown a hard time, which is another subject altogether. But yeah, no, I think we can definitely pay up for Bell this week, and I think we can feel pretty reasonable about it, particularly if we go cheap at quarterback.
Yeah, I think so too. I think that's a fine place to play, just a place to pay up for. His floor is so high considering the way they use him. The other guy, another player that we wrote up, and it's interesting, and this is where, so it's Jordan Howard, and this is one of those areas where you're like, okay, if it's stuck in your mind, like last week Jordan Howard right. was cheap and we played him and he was fine, and now the price takes a pretty dramatic jump up into 72. It goes from like in the mid 5,000s or I think low 6,000s on FanDuel last week all the way up to 7,200, which now is in that just, you know, upper middle tier of running back. You know, guys maybe that are good but not great and are RB1s. Now, can it get stuck in your head that we used to have him for a price and he's no longer a value, or just the way they use him, he still is, right? Like, so does that make sense what I'm asking? Like, has the price not fully caught up yet?
Well, you know, it's obviously a lot closer and the margins are a lot thinner here. Obviously, we would always prefer to pay 5,600 instead of 72, but I think last week, you know, and this is, we talk about this when you hear us say something like this will be his lowest price of the season, so it's the best week to play him. Howard last week was a perfect example of this. Like, he won't be that cheap again unless he loses his starting job, in which case you're not going to play him. So yeah, Howard's not going to sneak up on anyone this week, but I think he still does represent a value. I mean, the 26 touches last week are downright elite. You know, there's just not a lot of guys who are touching the ball that frequently, and almost all the guys that are more expensive. And so, you know, then with Howard, you continue to look and, you know, you can question, you know, is this sustainable? Was this the plan all along, or did something play out in Detroit that, you know, led him to get outsized opportunity compared to where he'll normally be? But actually with Howard, I think it's the opposite. You know, I'm very, very encouraged that they're using him in the passing game, that he does seem to be a three down back, unlike some of the other guys that, you know, in the similar range, like LeGarrette Blount or even West on Baltimore. So I do think that Howard is the real deal, and I think that he'll be, you know, worth, I don't know if a 10% gain is coming for him, but I think a 5 to 8% price increase is coming, and I think he'll still be a value. It's kind of like buying a stock, you know. You could, if you bought Google at its IPO, you got in the best, but you also would have done well when it doubled, right? So,
right, and I think that's where we are with him. And the other, they'll run him in the red zone. He's their goal line guy. He's the every down back. He still just strikes me as safe. Great matchup against Indy. Now, the other guy that falls into that sort of volume category, but we mentioned before that they've had a trouble running. We wrote up Melvin Gordon. If I probably had to take a guy back from the picks, he might be the guy after just looking at sort of like more of the yards per carry piece of it. That being said, they're still just giving him the ball a ton, and I don't think that's going to change. If you just had to make a guess right now about who's safer this week, Gordon or Howard, who would it be? I mean, they're similar price ranges on FanDuel at least.
I would say Howard, just because, you know, while starting running backs, there was a study done on this a couple of years ago, and I'm sorry that I can't credit who it was, but, you know, starting running backs actually lose their starting gig a lot less frequently than I think most people perceive, or they lose it due to bad performance a lot less frequency right. or frequently than most people perceive. And Gordon has been quite bad on a yards per carry basis. The question, I guess, is, you know, like, I do believe that Gordon, if he continues to get 2 yards per carry, that he won't continue to get the volume that he's been getting so far. But if he's going to continue getting this volume, that kind of doesn't matter what his yards per carry is, you know? So it's one of those things, like, do you want to be the guy who plays Gordon a week too late, or do you want to get out early? And given that we have other options, I think it's very reasonable to get out, you know, and he winds up scoring a couple touchdowns again or whatever, and you just don't kill yourself because he has 2 yards per carry. So I'm fine not playing Gordon this week. I do think he'll probably have a few more productive weeks left in him, or he'll turn it around. But yeah, I certainly understand the trepidation there.
The thing about this week is it's interesting. When you take away, if we're talking mostly main slate stuff, when you take away the Thursday and Monday game, and plus the teams on buys, you're left with really, from a fantasy standpoint, not too many games. And this is mostly the issue with this week. And this is why writing the picks up was a little harder, or why the concentration is on sort of a couple teams, and that's basically it. Like we mentioned, Howard and Hoyer already, Rivers and Gordon, and the Steelers, which we'll get to with Bell and Brown in a minute. But because there's so many other games that you just simply can't even target, like Philly's a great defense, Minnesota's a great defense, Pittsburgh's been fine this year. You have Denver and Atlanta. So like, or Atlanta going against Denver, because you have these other just good defenses, it really just knocks so many and just other offenses that you just can't even consider, like Denver. So because they have quarterback issues and whatnot.
You just look at the totals, right? I mean, right. 50 is the highest total. That's San Diego and Oakland. That's very low compared to where we've been, 10% lower than some weeks. And then from there, it doesn't really get that much better. It's a lot of middling sort of games, or the team is not very good. Like, you're going to take Ryan Fitzpatrick, it's just hard to find a lot of great fantasy talent with good matchups. So yeah, I'm with that.
The last guy on the list that you wrote up was DeMarco Murray. You mentioned this is the first time we've really thought about him at all.
It's been years.
Yeah.
since I've written DeMarco Murray.
But the case for him is pretty strong, and he's a guy also whose price has really climbed, and for good reason. Give me the case for Murray here.
Sure. So I think Murray, one way to think about investing big in DFS is what you're sinking your money into, right? So like, when you have this money left over, and where you want to put it. So you play, one way people build lineups, I mean, we obviously just click calculate on our lineup construction tool. So this is not how we build lineups anymore. But before we had such a sophisticated tool, we would often start by being like, well, who are our value guys? So like last week, it might have been Jordan Howard, right? So we're like, yeah, let's plug Howard in there. And you start to fill it out. And then you get up and you have money left over. So the question you want to ask yourself with the money that's left over is, essentially, do I want upside or safety, right? If you're going to be in cash, and sometimes you can get both, and that's when you're really, really happy, like maybe D'Angelo Williams earlier this year. But with Murray, I think that you're essentially investing in upside. And the reason I say that is the touches for him have been kind of erratic. I mean, typically running backs rather that rely heavily on pass targets can have, a higher degree of variance than guys who just ground and pound and also get pass targets. But with Murray, we've seen his touches have all headed in the right direction. And that's just been due to his tremendous ability to, generate yards on the ground on a yards per carry basis. So his 5.2 yards per carry have been very elite, particularly for a team that is really struggling offensively. And we've seen the Titans just lean on him more and more. I mean, last game, 27 touches. Wasn't as good on a yards per carry basis, but did get all the goal line work, wound up with a back-to-back now 24-plus fantasy point performances, and is averaging better than 20 fantasy points per game on the season, and that's tremendous. I mean, in an era where, there aren't just a lot of those plug-and-play running backs who are elite on a week-to-week basis, Murray's providing that, and given that his team really can't do anything else offensively, it stands to reason that we might not have seen his greatest game of the season yet. So, again, a shallow week, it's not a guy a lot of people will probably be on, especially with Le'Veon Bell in the same price range. But in a big tournament, I think you can do a lot worse than taking a guy who has that kind of volume and is doing so well with the volume he is getting.
Yeah, the Dolphins are better against the rush this year, though. They're still just kind of like an average team altogether. They're slightly favored to Tennessee. Again, Tennessee is not going to be really favored almost against anybody this year, so take that for what it's worth. They just are going to be the underdog. They're just not a very good team. But if Mariota struggled, I think the reason that they need Murray more than really than I thought they would is they just don't have any receivers. Like, Sharp has gotten targets, but just simply has done nothing with them. Walker's sort of been in and out. And after that, I mean, and those guys aren't.
And Mariota's been very erratic, too. I mean, well, his completion percentage is way down, and it's been kind of a mess. So,
again, chicken or the egg. Like, you're not sure. The receiving core is horrible. And so you just don't, like, could Mariota be better with a better group of receivers? Possibly. But the thing that they do have is Murray. And if that's just going to be the default option because they can't get anything else going, it's fine to pay off for him. I don't think you can do it in cash games considering the price compared to like the Le'Veon Bells of the world that are just slightly more, that are just significantly safer even in a worse matchup. So, but I do love the upside on Murray. Let's go.
Sure. A quick note on the Dolphins too. You mentioned they're a middle of the pack defense in terms of the defending the run this season. They have, you know, teams have attempted the most runs against the Dolphins as opposed to any other team this season. So while, yeah, they haven't been great on a yards per, or they have been decent on a yards per carry allowed basis, a lot of that has been because teams have been in very obvious running situations against them, just like beating the crap out of them. Right. And of course, we're just going to run and try to get everyone out of here on time, sure, beat traffic. So I think we haven't really, given that teams have been basically been saying like, yeah, we're about to run the ball, how do you want to set up your defense? I think that that number might be a bit misleading, and I wouldn't be shocked to see Murray definitely outpace that 3.9 yards per carry that the Dolphins have allowed this season.
And honestly, I mean, from just as the against the Dolphins stat too, they just really haven't played any good running backs yet. I mean, like I said, they had week one against Seattle, who that was a total mess with Rawls. Then they had Blunt, so, you know, New England did lean on him. But then they had Cleveland with Isaiah Crowell, right, who's actually been good. And then the Cincinnati, who just has sort of like a hybrid running game. So it's not like they've faced any real true elite running backs. There aren't that many elite running backs at this point. But,
or running games, yeah.
Yeah, or running games. So anyway, just another maybe note about where numbers can sort of fall in the middle on a team.
Yeah, I'm with you, buddy. That makes defense. Sense.
Wide receivers, we wrote a kind of a long missive note sort of at the beginning of our picks for the wide receiver position, talking mostly about the high price guys and some of the question marks. There's probably one that I'm going to do an about face on, although I'm realizing now maybe we didn't include him anyway. So the guy we started off with, Antonio Brown. Brown continues to, he just leads the league in targets. He's just the guy. Has anything changed for you on Brown, or are we just continuing to do like sort of the copy paste version of this is the, he's going to be the guy as long as the Steelers are playing, he's just going to be in the picks just kind of every week.
Well, yeah, Brown actually second in the league to Mike Evans now in terms of targets. Mm. But again, Brown's targets are created better than Mike Evans. Right. He still has more yards than him and more receptions. But I do think that Brown will be a copy-paste job essentially going forward. You know, some people might be concerned about Le'Veon Bell coming back and eating into his target share, but that really hasn't played out that way in the past that much. I mean, D'Angelo Williams was seeing the ball a ton, and Brown was still fine. I think the bigger story there is the lack of other good receiving options, which is why they're considering Bell in the slot as it is. But yeah, no, I think Brown is a tremendous play, almost independent of matchup. He will get that tested again this week. I mean, I think Brown is probably due for some kind of huge week in the future when he just, because he just keeps getting bad matchups. But yeah, still absolutely playable even against Revis, I think.
Yeah, the other guys we kind of said maybe you want to just move beyond was AJ Green. Hopkins just hasn't seen anywhere close to the volume that we thought with him. And then Julio Jones gets a bad matchup against Denver, even though he's coming off of, obviously a historic week last week. And it's a little closer for Jones if you think that the touches are going to be in that, you know, low two-figure number, like that 12 to 13. They could definitely go back his way again. Though, again, the matchup's not good. The one guy we didn't put on here that's actually starting to show up in optimal lineups for us now is Beckham. So Beckham's a weird guy, right? He's come this week, God, the news cycle in football is so funny. So there's quotes about Beckham saying he's just not having fun anymore, which kind of like nobody, in the old nobody wants to hear it category. like some guy, like a really rich, I get why he's saying it, he's just being honest, but a really rich athlete coming out and saying, I'm just not having fun anymore, it's kind of like, dude, I don't know. That being said.
Oh, hold on a second, because we write about daily fantasy sports for a living and talk about it for a living, and sometimes it feels not fun, right?
Oh, okay, yeah, you know, again, right, but I wouldn't get on the podcast and just talk about how not fun it is. That's mostly
if you were interviewed like 24/7 and interviewed after like one of your worst calls ever. Like if someone caught you like right after, let's put you in the shoes of it's halftime in that Falcons game. And the texts that you're sending me, and someone's like, hey, Doug, how's it feel to be a total moron and miss out on that Julio Jones call? How are you feeling right now, buddy?
Yeah, well, okay, whatever. Moving. So the Beckham thing, right? If you look at
whatever, man, that's impolite. This is a team effort, buddy. We don't just ignore each other.
He's right around 11 targets a game. The two games where he saw just his lowest production of the year were against a really, really good defense in Minnesota and a very slow team against Dallas. The other two games against Washington and New Orleans were just kind of fine. Now, the problem he's had is no touchdowns. They've looked at him in the red zone. He just hasn't caught one. He outright dropped one against the Saints, which would probably, like if he, again, I've kind of mentioned this a couple times, but if he catches that 40-yard touchdown pass that he just had in his hands, even then, maybe he's having fun then. I don't know. But the
but even then, he's still only up to one touchdown on the season, right? Like, I think that with Beckham, I guess like the big question here is, at what point are we just making excuses for a guy, right? Because so like take Dallas, for instance. Yeah, they've played pretty slow this season. They've given up more passing yards than the Giants, who were calling a good matchup for opposing quarterbacks, right? So I don't think – I mean, yeah, Dallas has played kind of slow, but they've also gotten kind of torn up in the air given how few plays they've – offensive plays they've allowed to other teams. And I'll caveat all this by saying I do like Beckham. I just think like it's probably worth exploring. I mean, for you, we're 4 weeks into the season. Like, at what point do you just say, okay, something has changed fundamentally about a player?
I'm not ready to say that. I don't think it has. I mean, the team might be slightly worse than we thought they were going to be. The run game, the targets for me are still there. And I think that just there's like a narrative piece around him that doesn't seem good, obviously fueled a little bit by this quote, a little bit more by the no touchdown. So I think he's just a guy. I think I'll play him in cash games, honestly. I just think that the floor is still there for a guy like him, especially with the Giants are just willing to use him in the pass game and the fact that they're just not going to be able to run as much this week and they'll probably be playing from behind against Green Bay.
Okay, so I'm hearing all that, and I think that again, back to the conversation around at what point do we just say something has changed, even if the targets are there. So I'll throw out a couple of other big name receivers who we're not considering for cash game purposes this week. Well, one guy who's on a bye this week, but I think it's a comparable case to Beckham, is Allen Robinson. So we weren't recommending Allen Robinson going into the game against Indianapolis, but Robinson also averaging double-digit targets this season. He had gotten into the end zone twice in the previous week in a tougher matchup with Baltimore. What do you see as fundamentally different about a guy like Allen Robinson or Odell Beckham? Or is it just one of those situations where it's like kind of close, but you know, the needle is slightly tipped in a guy like Beckham.
Yeah, it's hard for me to compare because I don't remember exactly what we had him projected wise. Like, that would be easier, right, like apples to apples, if I was able to see what we had in front of me, which we could look back and look
it
up.
Well, how about DeAndre Hopkins? So, I mean, Hopkins obviously has quite a bad matchup this week, but if Hopkins were facing, you know, if Hopkins and Beckham switched teams, but their opportunity was the same. Now, Hopkins' targets are down a little bit. He's down in the, you know, just over 8 targets a game range. But I'm just trying to get a sense, right? Because, you know, Beckham wasn't in that top tier of targets per game last season. And obviously he had many transcendent weeks. But I'm just trying to help the listeners understand why, you know, you're keeping a steady hand on him, but maybe not some other guys.
I just think that his production isn't very, at least the targets aren't variable. Let me give you another one. Like, so would you rather play Beckham this week against Green Bay or Julio Jones against Denver?
I think I'd rather play Beckham against Green Bay. And I think that's because, you know, the matchup is so much better. And I think, frankly, Julio Jones, in spite of one tremendous week, I still have a lot of the same questions about him that I had the week prior to that. Now, some of that could have been injury. And, you know, I think we kind of get lucky with Julio Jones having a tough matchup this week because, you know, it would be kind of a crisis of conscience for me. Like, do we, you know, just change everything we thought going into last week based on 1 week's worth of performance? So I'm not sure. But
well, let me give you
I mean, I guess I like what you're saying about Beckham. I think he is a reasonable playing going forward. I do think that you'll be sticking your neck out there playing him, though. And I'm just trying to get a sense of whether it's worth the $8,500.
Well, that's why I'm just going in tears here, because like two other guys, AJ Green and Jordy Nelson, both also basically the same price as Beckham. I'm looking at FanDuel right now. So Beckham versus either those two guys, let's call AJ Green sort of like in that elite target class, and then Jordy Nelson maybe close-ish. But, you know, of those three guys, who would you choose?
Well, this might be time for a no halftime challenge, Doug, because I think I'm ready here. So no halftime, for those of y'all who don't know about it, no halftime is a new app that allows people to make one-on-one fantasy challenges with other people around the world. And they're very unique in that it's essentially a one-player fantasy team that you draft. So you choose AJ Green, for instance, and then you can just let, you know, you can issue a challenge out to the world and say, yeah, I'll take AJ Green. If you want to take Odell Beckham, whoever gets the most points wins the money. So very straightforward, very clean app, very easy to use. You can create your own challenges and put them out there or troll around their site and, you know, comb through the hundreds of challenges that other people have issued. A lot of great value there. Doug and I both play. And if you use promo code DFSR25, you can get a 100% bonus up to a $25 deposit. So the challenge I would like to issue for this week, I think, yeah, AJ Green against Odell Beckham.
You would take Green against Dallas?
I think, yeah, I'll take Green. You know, again, I think the perception that Dallas plays slow for me is over, you know, outweighed by the fact that they have just given up a lot of passing yards. I do think that Green, you know, unlike Beckham, has converted his targets into something tangible. So, you know, he's got now two great weeks, one of those against Darrell Revis and the Jets. Was also serviceable against Denver in a very tough matchup. So, yeah, I'll take Green over Beckham here.
Yeah, I would take Beckham, and we can just put that one on the board. I tend to trust the system. The inputs, I think, are strong for us, and they've been correlated with success this year so far. We have Beckham for significantly more points than Green. So I'm happy to take that part of it. I'd happily take the Beckham side of it. I kind of see, and I think mostly is because I kind of see them as basically the same guy, and just Beckham just has a better matchup. So, and that's, again, a lot of these situations come down to if we simply just switch the matchups for these guys, things obviously would look different. Hey, it's matchup dependent. It's the NFL. So,
I'm not ready to just accept out of hand, by the way, that he has a better matchup. I mean, Dallas has allowed 10% more passing yards per game than Green Bay has this season. And yeah, some of that's, like, you're looking at, you know, numbers that I think are a little bit more subjective. You know, those are our numbers that we use to determine, you know, the exact wide receiver matchup and what we perceive to be, you know, the guys who will actually cover AJ Green versus Odell Beckham. And from that perspective, like, I think they're sound and I think they're good, but I think there's more subjectivity to it than, you know, just a flat, oh, it's a better matchup thing. Because I definitely don't see it that way.
You do know. Horrible job of selling our system today, buddy, just so you know.
Well, I think that any system is going to have some subjectivity to it, and I think it's fine to give full disclosure that, you know, ours does too, right? So, I do think, I mean, you're saying there's a huge, huge gulf between them. I think that's probably overstating it just a little bit. I mean, the other thing that our system likes about Beckham is that extra $200 you do save, while not a ton, is still a material amount. So, with Green, it's a close. It's also just kind of close, and I like to bet against you, so that's another reason. This is not actually a challenge I would put out on No Halftime.
It's funny about Green Bay, right? Like, they, against wide receiver ones this year, rank 31st in DVOA. Now, a decent part of that comes from the huge Marvin Jones game that they gave up.
And the Stephon Diggs game.
Right, but that's two huge games. So, like, those two huge games against wide receiver one. So, at some point, you're like, and they allow the most, second most attempts to wide receiver ones this season, right, only behind Miami. So, between the amount of attempts slash just the amount of performances that have been put up against Green Bay, whereas Dallas has allowed six attempts per game to wide receiver ones and ranks ninth. I don't know. I'm mostly saying this too because, like, these are a lot of the inputs that we have going in for some of these receivers. So why there might be a gulf between it again, where if you switched around Green and made him face Green Bay this week, we'd be all over him saying he was the play.
I do think that, you know, just, and I know we want to move on, but. And by we, I mean you. You want to move on.
I do want to move on, yeah.
I do think that, you know, when we're looking at those numbers, I guess I just want to continue to caution because the thing about Dallas, too, if you look at the wide receiver ones they've faced this season, it's been whoever on San Francisco, right? Jeremy Curley. I don't know who their wide receiver one is. Torrey Smith. On Chicago, banged up Alshon Jeffrey against Washington. Question mark, question mark, question mark, DeSean Jackson, I guess. And then Odell Beckham, the guy you love, wasn't good against them week one. So I think that, you know, I'm just not ready. You can't crown the Cowboys and their ability to shut down wide receiver ones based on that's an excellent four games to have played so far this season. If you're just comparing, you know, across what a league average schedule would be. So I'm just not ready to say that either matchup is necessarily better or worse yet. So in that case, I'll take the guy who actually has put up the huge games in Green.
For sure. Let's move on to the other guys we wrote up were Julian Edelman and Terrell Pryor. Edelman, the big news for him, obviously, is getting Brady back into the passing game. He's pretty much an elite target guy when Brady is on the field. I don't know if we need to break him down too much. We spent a ton of time just on me wanting to talk about one guy. But Edelman is – do you see him as just sort of like the highest floor safety guy in his price range considering the matchup and the fact that Brady's back?
Yeah, I mean, Edelman to me is this week's Jordan Howard. You know, at 7,000, he's just worth more than that when Brady's around. And whether it's 5% more or 10% more, you know, I guess we're not sure yet. But with Gronk being hurt, I would suspect it's more, you know, it could be as high as 15% or 20% more too with Gronk injured. So I think that Edelman is a great play and a really great spot to save up at a position that, you know, has more uncertainty than it might in a normal week. So.
And the other guy we had there was Pryor. He's going against New England. He'll probably be more contrarian, I think, all things considered. Now, they should be playing from behind, and the targets can be there. They threw to him in the red zone, which is a good news for him last week. Do you see him as a cash game or more of a tournament play? He was the last guy we had on the list.
Well, I mean, it depends on who you're choosing him against, right? I think if you're choosing between him and Edelman, Edelman is clearly the safer play. But I think if you're talking about choosing him over one of those more expensive guys like Beckham or Green or someone in that category, I think he has arguably as much upside. And I think that in a game where the Browns are almost certain to be trailing and given their lack of receiving options, I think he actually does have a higher floor than maybe it sounds like you do. I'd be comfortable playing Pryor in any format, frankly. But if you have to decide at that price point, I would rather have Edelman.
The other guy that I wish we had written up, I wrote him up for our wide receiver value. And I think, in retrospect, we publish these articles early. And we do that because we want to get people information quickly. And then with the caveat that this information is, you know, going to change and shift over the course of the week. I wish we had written up Brandon Marshall. I let off the wide receiver value with him. He was a guy, he got double-digit targets last week facing against Richard Sherman. And he converted it to 4 for 89 and a touchdown, which, I mean, all things, you'll take that against, you know, arguably the best cover corner in the league, or, you know, if he's not the best,
he's been combo.
With Decker out, Marshall sort of becomes their option one and maybe 1A. I know they have a none well there as well. Do you see, you know, if you were to look at this now on Thursday as opposed to Tuesday when we wrote it, would you rather play Marshall over Pryor, or would you, let's, you know, 400 more for Marshall? Is that something you would consider doing?
I would consider doing it. I mean, I think that Marshall is kind of not the only guy. They do like a Nunwa there, but, you know, he's essentially he's the only big name guy. He's the only guy that's going to put up the monstrous game for the Jets. I think him and Pryor are pretty similar, frankly. So I don't know that I view it as as big a gulf as you do.
No, but, let me phrase. I don't see it as a gulf. It was more like I wish we had just had him in there. And I think he is a cash game consideration, and that's sort of where we're focusing here. So that's
big time. No, I think he's absolutely a cash game play, and that's totally fine.
Let's finish it off with the tight ends. I think we kind of trended on the cheaper side here. We had mentioned Gronk in our last podcast, just sort of recapping week four, we talked about Gronk. There's been more news coming out about him, you know, with things like, quote, he doesn't look right and the hamstring's still an issue. I think we can wipe him off the table. That's all the news you need to just know. In the last podcast where I was like, the only way I'd really start considering him is if he got a full, clean bill of health. That is not the case. I think we can move past Gronk. Some of the other the tight end options like Reed and Olsen are just very, very expensive. So we sort of focused on the cheaper tier of tight ends. And I actually think these cheaper guys, I feel pretty good with them. The first two are Kyle Rudolph and Hunter Henry. We like them sort of for different reasons, I think, but both strike me as cash game plays. Give me the case for Rudolph.
Yeah, so Rudolph, you know, a tight end is always an interesting position to evaluate because guys are basically, I mean, they're just cheaper relative to what you pay at other positions. So, well, on the cheap end, and then the expensive guys are more expensive, you know, in a kind of an odd comparison with the guys at the other positions. But so what we like about Rudolph, so Rudolph with his 14% target share this season, that's actually comparable to a guy like Brandon Marshall, who, and that's on just high in general, like most guys, you know, that's more like a wide receiver 1A type of target percentage versus a tight end percentage. Obviously at a tight end, his targets are not created equally to a guy like Marshall, who will get downfield quite a bit more. Rudolph was also their primary red zone target in the passing game. Diggs, you know, while good and can stretch the field in some ways, he's not a guy that is as good when the field gets shortened up because he doesn't quite have the size that Rudolph does. So Rudolph, I think, provides a decent floor on the target share and a decent upside given that he's such a good red zone target and he's very affordable. You know, he's just costs about as much as guys like Hunter Henry or you know, other guys that haven't proven it quite as much. So I like Rudolph quite a bit.
I think Rudolph's the highest owned tight end this week on both sites. He's 3,600 on DraftKings, which is just a total bargain. And even like 5,500, I think, on FanDuel, even that's a bargain. So I think he's, I think you end up seeing him as the chalk tight end play. You know, the Hunter Henry only $100 less. The targets aren't there as much, though. You're encouraged when you see them throw to him in the red zone. They throw to Rudolph too. I don't think I would definitely not play Henry over Rudolph, but I think you see Henry as the second highest owned tight end this week. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, and Henry's been solid for the people that have played him. I think that very, very reasonable play. You know, obviously Rivers is developing a comfort level with him, and it's a great matchup with Oakland. So, yeah, I can see him being heavily owned, and I prefer Rudolph too.
The last guy we wrote up, and he falls probably more into the tournament play for me, is Delanie Walker. And that's mostly because of matchup. Miami is just so bad against the pass, really against every position. He does see enough targets, and they will target him in the end zone as well. He's a little more expensive than the two guys we mentioned above, so I don't think I would play. There's no reason to spend up for him, I don't think at all. But in terms of just raw points, what you get, he saw 23% of their targets last week against Houston, and that's just such a big number. And if you're going to get him in a good defensive matchup, I think he does have some tournament upside. It's just going to be hard to go there cash game-wise just because you have to pay so much more for him.
Yep, I'm on board with all that.
We will be back again tomorrow. We'll break down each game on the slate, sort of talk about the considerations just coming out of every matchup. We're from dailyfantasysportsrankings.com, dfsr.com for short. Head over, grab a free trial to the projection system powered by Lineup Lab, where you can calculate optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings, NFL, MLB, coming soon, NBA. You're all covered if you're playing those sites and want to continue winning over there. Free for a couple days, and then $29.95 a month after that. Buddy, back tomorrow talking some full game-by-game breakdown. You excited?
Oh, yeah, baby. I am, as they would say, photo shoot fresh, looking like wealth. I'm about to call the paparazzi on myself.
Talk to you tomorrow.
Yep. Bye-bye.